Welcome to the History Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Thomason. The History Podcast is an educational podcast intended to engage student and lifelong learning in American history. Without further delay, let's get to it. Welcome to the podcast. Today we're going to be talking about the risk-taking, even reckless voyages of Englishman Henry Hudson. But first, let's do some background work before we get into Hudson's four voyages. Quite frankly, not much is known about Hudson's genealogy. It is widely believed, though, that his family was likely involved in the shipping business, but there's no way of telling because his family, to our knowledge, was not a part of the genteel or aristocratic social classes. So unless your family was a part of those two social classes, we're not going to have genealogical records of that time period. We do know that he marries at a very young age. He gets married to a woman named Catherine, and they have three boys, Oliver, John, and Richard. Some of those boys will actually go on voyages with their father. Another thing that we need to kind of put out there up front is that Hudson, like many of these explorers, were not looking for the Americas. Many of these guys were looking for the Northwest Passage or other passages such as the Northeast Passage, or even trying to go straight north to try to go see if there's a way through the North Pole. Why not go south, you might ask? And that's a really good question. But there's a couple of reasons why. Number one, you're still, even though the Mongols have fallen by this point in time, and all the other empires that they've had control over in that region have fallen apart, this is still a risk to try to go through this portion of the world, the southeast. You can't go the other direction in the south because of the Spanish and the Portuguese. And we've talked about them in previous episodes. So all of these groups are south of the English and Dutch explorers. So put frankly, the south is a no-go. Maybe you can go straight west. Well, we found out in 1492, you can't really do that. So that leaves us potentially with northwest, northeast, or possibly even straight north. In the 16th and 17th centuries, it was believed that it could be possible to get to Asia by going over the North Pole and into Asia. I know what you're thinking, but at the time it was believed that it could be done. Yes, it's icy, but it's common knowledge that the closer you get to the poles, the sun doesn't set. So they believed maybe the closer you got to the North Pole, the sun would melt the ice and allow enough of a passage for ships to pass through. There were certain times of the year, too, where the sun wouldn't set the closer you got to the North Pole. So maybe if you just kept pushing through the elements, eventually you would make it through the waterway. Our modern minds struggle with this line of thinking. But if we can put ourselves in this time period, it's possible to see how this was at least worth entertaining. And in 1607, the fearless Henry Hudson will set out to determine whether or not it can be done. At this point in his career, he is working for the Muscovy Company, which is based out of England. And he's going to head as far north as he possibly can. And on this expedition, he will find places to this point in time that had never been discovered, places like Spitsbergen, which is what we would consider the northern part of modern-day Norway. And as the voyage continued, he will also discover things like wells, which finding wells in that region is really important for him, because if he does not find a northern passage to Asia through the North Pole, he better be able to bring something back to his investors that give them hope that investing in Hudson in the future is worthwhile. And wells at least give him something to take back to the investors. But over time, as they continue to move further and further north, the elements are starting to take their toll, and members on the ship are beginning to resist Hudson. Sensing impending danger due to the elements and a potential mutiny, Hudson reluctantly decides to turn around and return to England. What I find interesting about this first voyage is that he will get within 600 miles of reaching the North Pole. It's pretty impressive when you consider he was in a boat. And there's enough interest when Hudson returns for the Muscovy Company to send him out on a second voyage. This time, he's going to see if there is a northeast passage to Asia, which would send him through what we would consider modern-day Russia, retracing the route of a Dutch explorer by the name of William Barents. It's important to note that Barents perished on that voyage, and while Hudson is not going to take that same exact route, he is fully aware that Barents was unsuccessful in finding the Northeast Passage. I mean, there's no way for him not to be. Barents actually runs into a frozen island on his expedition about a decade prior. And they find this frozen island where they're forced to spend the winter. So imagine what you would see on this frozen island. There's not a whole lot of life at all. The only wildlife you see on the island, according to their logs, to Barents's logs, was polar bears. And you're stranded on an island with what you have and polar bears. Not ideal. They used what they had to build shelters and did their best to survive the winter on this island, which will be named Nova Zembla. And you can actually still find that on a map if you look it up. Now, if indeed Hudson knew about Barents's voyage a decade earlier, and I contend that it's very likely that he did. For him to embark on this voyage is borderline reckless. And based on Hudson's journal entries, many of the men on this journey to try to find a northeast passage, as it got colder and colder and the food supply dwindled and they begin to get seasick, they become very delusional. And one of the more fascinating journal entries from this voyage is by Hudson. And Hudson records that many of the men truly believed that they saw mermaids, and that the mermaids were trying to get them to join them in the sea. Now, I know that seems a bit far-fetched, but this is what happens when you're out on the sea for long, long, arduous periods of time. That is, unless you believe in mermaids. And while we never find a northeast passage, he never finds a northeast passage, he will find seals, which he believes would be very valuable to his investors. Again, think back to the first voyage, he finds whales. This voyage, he at least finds some seals, and he hopes that this will appease the investors back in England. The interesting thing about the seals is that this will help launch the seal industry in England. So while he never does find the Northeast Passage that he was looking for, he does bring back good news for prospective investors in the seal industry. At the end of his log on Voyage 2, he makes a comment that I find very foreshadowing of the rest of his story. He writes that he is bound and determined on his next voyage to find a northwest passage. Once Hudson returns to England, however, the Muscovy Company is no longer interested in Hudson, and this will lead to him becoming what we would consider in the modern sports world a free agent. He will take contracts with the Dutch, who will fund his next voyage, a voyage that they want to be about going back and trying to find a northeast passage. Now, the thing that we need to understand about Hudson, I think, in terms of an advantage that he has, is he's got a wealth of knowledge from these previous experiences, on top of which he now has a lot of the maps that the Dutch have produced during this period of time. And this is a period where the imperialist powers are not going to share their maps with other countries. That makes no sense, right? So he's been working with the English, and he has experience in the Arctics. He has experience in the Northeast, although he's not going to share that with the Dutch. But he also has the maps that have been made by Dutch explorers at his disposal. So his knowledge is building when it comes to the Atlantic region. When they come to the table to, in fact, he doesn't even go to negotiate the contract himself. He sends Dutch-speaking friends of his to negotiate the contract for him, which is pretty smart. He's going to negotiate a contract with the Dutch East India Company, which at this time is arguably the largest company, in the world. And the Dutch East India Company wants to find a northeast passage, the same passage that Hudson just tried to find in the previous voyage and knows does not exist, but Hudson keeps that to himself. See, Hudson has other motives in mind. He has a lot of, as I mentioned, a lot of map-making friends in the Netherlands to negotiate this contract because they speak the language. And the Dutch East Indian Company likely knew that Hudson had floated the idea around about trying to find a northwest passage, which would go against what they wanted, and that is to find a northeast passage. So in the bottom part of his contract, they add a stipulation to the contract that states that under no circumstance is Hudson to seek out or search any other passage except the Northeast Passage, which they are paying him for. And now this contract is signed in 1609. And so Hudson agrees to stick to the plan to go to find the Northeast Passage, if there is a Northeast Passage, which he knows there isn't one. And he will set out north originally, but suddenly he will head west. And there is no written account as to why this takes place. But even though we don't have written records of Hudson saying why they went west, it's pretty obvious based on the previous log from Voyage 2, where he stated he was bound and determined to find a northwest passage. Now, you can't go south of South America because of the Spanish and also the Portuguese. And you can't go north of North America because he's already tried that. It's too icy. The only way, if there is a way, to Asia through the Atlantic is through the mid-Atlantic. And maybe, just maybe, he believes there's a channel that cuts right through the middle of the continent. Now, by this point in time, the Dutch had figured out how to measure speed. Okay? So, and for the sake of the podcast, we don't have time to go into measuring speed on ships. But they measure speed with knots. And so they've determined how to measure speed. It's not an exact science, but it's close enough. And they also know at this point in time how to measure latitude, basic sun position. Again, not a perfect system, but it's close enough. The one thing they haven't at this point in time been able to measure is longitude. In other words, they could measure speed for the most part and also understanding north and south, but they can't understand east and west in terms of measurables. They simply had to hope that their keeping of knots was accurate enough that it would only put them slightly off course. Now, Hudson is on a half-moon ship for this voyage, which he's supposed to go find the Northeast Passage, but he is going to be seeking a Northwest Passage, despite what his contract states. And these half-moon ships, if you've ever seen, we're very familiar with these half-moon ships. These half-moon ships at this time could travel up to 100 miles a day. That is, as long as the conditions were favorable. When they arrive on the coast of Labrador, which is now a part of Canada, he begins to salt cod, which is good food sources for their men on this long journey, but it's also going to be good for trade when they encounter native people groups. It's a strong trade commodity. Now, on this trip, he's actually going to overshoot what is now New York Harbor. He will also overshoot what we call historically New England and what we call the Middle Colonies. And he'll end up near Jamestown. Remember, Jamestown is founded in 1607. But the problem for Henry Hudson, an Englishman, is he can't land his ships there. This is an English colony, and he's in a Dutch boat. And again, what makes matters worse is he's an Englishman on a Dutch boat. That would be viewed as treasonous. So while he can't actually land at Jamestown, it does give him an idea of where he is, and he is able to narrowly escape English boats there in and around the harbor of Jamestown. But now that he knows where he is on the map, he can begin searching up the East Coast heading north and actually discovers Delaware Bay and also the New York Harbor. This is a huge meeting point for native tribes. It's along what will become known as Manhattan. It's full of native tribes, mostly Algonquin-speaking tribes. And they will trade with the natives, and there will be pockets of violence here and there. But ultimately, Hudson and his party are able to navigate further up the river, which will eventually bear his name, the Hudson River. Now, if you are looking for a Northwest Passage, why would you go upstream on a river? I mean, wouldn't that lead to higher ground eventually? I mean, you're going to run out of water. If you know you're on a river, you know that eventually you're going to run into something that's no longer water. We all know when you go upstream, that means it's flowing downstream from a land source. But Hudson, based on the information given to him, may not have believed it to be a river. Maybe he believed it was a bay that might open up into an ocean eventually, maybe even the Pacific. It's only later, much further into the voyage, that he realizes, oh crap, this is a river. But by then it's too late. One thing that leads Hudson to believe these were untouched waterways, untouched territories by other Europeans, was that the natives came out to trade with him and his men. They came out with tobacco and beans and other crops. They did not come out with furs, which were very common once they were exposed to Europeans. And Hudson is amazed at how beautiful the land is. This untapped, what he believes to be untapped terrain. Lots of grain. And the natives are, for the most part, very friendly to his party. It's difficult historically to identify the exact tribe that they encountered here. But based on what we do know, these are likely still Algonquin-speaking tribes. Now, eventually, Hudson realized that the Hudson River, as we will eventually call it, is actually a river. And understanding that is going to lead to problems on board. His His crew is not going to be happy. His crew is going to look at him as if he has no clue what he's doing. And I know that it's easy in our modern minds, that I run into this all the time, but it's easy for us in our modern mind to criticize Hudson for not understanding that this was a river. But he was in uncharted territory. So I think we need to give him a pass here, because these were huge risks he was taking, and he was going into unknown territory for the first time. Hudson finally decides that it's time to turn around and go back home. There is massive disappointment on board. He's going to have to report back to the Dutch, and he's going to be able to tell them that there are furs and pelts there. So again, with each of these voyages, he's having to find things to sell investors on, that, hey, you got to send me back. You got to keep sending me out there, because there's stuff out here. There are resources out here. And this will eventually lead to the Dutch founding the New Netherlands. So, I mean, even though he doesn't find a Northwest Passage, this is going to lead to further development, further settlements in this region of North America. So from a historical point of view, he may have failed to find that Northwest Passage, but he's going to open up more exploration in the decades to come. The Dutch will eventually claim the territory that is New Jersey, New York, parts of Connecticut, parts of Pennsylvania, parts of Delaware, and they will say that this belongs to them because they hired Hudson, who is an Englishman, but they say, we hired him, so this should be ours. And based on their accounts with the natives, it was their first encounter with Europeans. So in their minds, we're the first ones here. We hired Hudson. I know he's an Englishman, but we hired him. So it's the Dutch property. And when Hudson returns to the Netherlands, the Dutch East India Company was furious, as you can imagine. They told him to go find the Northeast Passage. He reroutes and goes northwest. So they too will no longer work with Hudson. So once again, he's a free agent. And he will end up back in England for voyage number 4, where he'll get funding for this next trip, and he'll get it from the British East India Company. And also, the Virginia Stock Company will invest in him. They'll sign a contract with Hudson to send him to find the Northwest Passage. Hudson only has one little body of water that he hasn't pursued yet. This is really the last hope for a Northwest Passage in his mind. All the other avenues have led to dead ends. This small little area in the north is what we now call Hudson Bay, where he'll end up getting stuck. But he is bound and determined, so he just keeps going. And that's why he gets stuck, is because he's like, no, we just keep going. I want you to think about like going into a cul-de-sac. If you are familiar with a cul-de-sac, when you go down a cul-de-sac, it's a dead end. And so what Hudson does with these ships, imagine just staying along the right side of a cul-de-sac, and you're trying to convince yourself and your crew that, hey, no, just keep going. It's gonna open up, and it never does. And now you're stuck in that little cul-de-sac area. The crew gets extremely angry because not only has winter come, the water has frozen over, and now their ship is stuck. And they will have to stay there for a while and rely on the supplies they have left on board. And as the crew becomes more and more hungry, they become more and more furious. They get hangry, as we might say. And when you combine this with their frustration with Hudson's stubbornness, his reckless behavior, as they view it, they form a mutiny. And the members on Hudson's Half Moon are going to bind his hands together. They're going to put him in a boat that is lowered. And this is by this point in time, the ice has started to melt. And so they're going to go back home, but they're not going back with him. They don't trust that he'll go back like they want to, that he'll just continue to push forward now that the ice is starting to melt. They bind his hands, they lower a boat and put him and his son in there. They also put all the people who are sick and ill and diseased, they put them in that boat. And they leave them. And the crew goes back to England without its captain and his son and many others who were sick, and left them to their own devices. Kind of a sad ending to Henry Hudson's life, and we don't know what happened to Henry Hudson after that. There's no record. There are a lot of theories out there that maybe they were able to make landfall and lived off the land there, but no one knows. What we do know is that there was no Northwest Passage at that time. What I do find interesting is that in modern day, due to global warming, there is actually now a Northwest Passage that you can take by boat over the top of Canada. And then by the time we get to the early 1900s, there will be a canal built in Panama, which both cut down travel time to the Pacific. But Hudson, I think we need to understand, is a valuable study in the very high-stakes game the world powers were involved in trying to find a shortcut to Asia. That's all the time we have for today. Thanks for joining us. See you next time. Thanks for listening to the History Podcast. We would like your feedback, good or bad, so that we can better serve our audience. If you have a question you would like for us to answer in a future podcast or have a topic request, leave that as well. If you haven't already subscribed to the History Podcast, go ahead and do that now so that you'll get notified when new episodes come out. You can find the History Podcast on any of your podcast streaming platforms. The History Podcast is an Anchor FM production.